Chapter 14. They came aboard at almost the same moment the Abyss Navigator reached the seabed and Pitt phoned in a status report. The crew was going about their routine duties while the scientific team was in the command center monitoring Pitt and Giordino's investigation of the Emerald Dolphin's wreck. The hijacking came so suddenly and unexpectedly, no one on Deep Encounter realized it was happening. Birch was leaning back in his chair, arms folded across his chest, eyeing the monitors, when Delgado, who was standing next to the radar equipment, noticed a fast-moving blip on the screen. "We have a visitor coming our way out of the northeast." "Probably a warship," said Birch, without turning from the monitors. "We're a good 2 miles off the commercial shipping lanes."
"She doesn't have the look of a warship," answered Delgado. "But she appears to be moving at a fairly high rate of speed, and she's coming straight at us."
Birch's eyebrows rose. Without replying to Delgado, he picked up a pair of binoculars and walked out onto the bridge wing. As he stared into the distance through the 7x50 lenses, a bright orange and white boat increased in size as it cut the water toward Deep Encounter. Any hint of apprehension faded. The approaching vessel did not seem to suggest any threat.
"What do you make of her?" asked Delgado.
"An oil company utility work boat. A big one," replied Birch. "And fast by the look of the spray flying over her bow. Good for at least 30 knots.
"I wonder where she came from. There are no oil rigs within 1,000 miles.
I'm more interested in why she's interested in us.
Does she have a name or a company emblem on the hull?"
"Odd," Birch said slowly. "The name on her bow and any sign of whatever company owns her are covered over."
As if prompted, the radio operator joined them on the bridge wing.
"I have the skipper of the oil company boat on the ship's phone," he said to Birch. The captain opened a watertight box and switched on the bridge wing speaker.
"This is Captain Birch of the Numa ship, Deep Encounter. Go ahead."
"Captain Wheeler of the Mistral Oil Company boat Pegasus, do you have a doctor on board?"
"Affirmative. What is your complication?"
"We have a badly injured man."
"Come alongside, and I'll send over our ship's doctor."
"Better we bring him aboard your ship. We have no medical facilities or supplies."
Birch looked at Delgado.
"You hurt?"
"Most odd," said Delgado.
"My thoughts also," agreed Birch. "Having no doctor on a workboat is understandable, but no medical supplies? That doesn't figure."
Delgado began to step toward the companionway. "I'll have a crew standing by to hoist a stretcher on board."
The workboat came to a stop about 50 yards away from the survey ship. A few minutes later, a launch was lowered with a man covered with blankets on a litter and laid across the seats. 4 men also entered the launch, and it was soon rising and dropping in the waves next to the Deep Encounter's hull. Unexpectedly, 3 of the workboat's crew jumped on board and helped lift the injured man onto the work deck, rudely pushing the Deep Encounter's crew aside. Suddenly, the visitors threw back the blankets and snatched up automatic weapons that had been hidden beneath them and turned them on Birch's survey crew. The man on the stretcher leaped to his feet, took an offered gun, and ran toward the starboard stairway leading to the bridge. Birch and Delgado realized immediately that it was a hijacking. On a commercial ship or private yacht, they'd have rushed to a gun locker and begun passing out weapons. But under international law, survey ships were not allowed to carry arms. They could do nothing but stand helpless until the intruder stepped onto the bridge deck. The hijacker did not look like a pirate. No peg leg, parrot, or eye patch. He had more of an executive air about him. The hair was prematurely gray, the face with only a slight trace of tan. He was of medium height, with a stomach slightly larger than his waist. He wore the appearance of a man comfortable with authority, and he was smartly dressed in a golf shirt and Bermuda shorts. Almost as an act of courtesy, he did not aim the muzzle of his automatic rifle at either Birch or Delgado, but held it casually pointed toward the sky. For a moment, they inspected one another warily. Then the intruder ignored Delgado and turned to Birch, speaking politely in American English.
Captain Birch, I presume. And you are? My name is of no consequence, the pirate said in a tone that rasped like a file against iron. I hope you will offer no resistance. What in hell are you doing on my ship? Birch demanded. We are confiscating it, replied the intruder with a hard edge in his tone. No one will be harmed. Birch stared at him incredulously. This ship is the property of the United States government. You don't have the authority to simply walk on board and confiscate her. Oh, but we can. He held up the gun. This is our authority. As he spoke, the three armed gunmen on the work deck began rounding up the survey ship's crew. The workboat's launch soon returned with 10 more armed men who stationed themselves throughout the ship. This is madness, snarled Birch indignantly. What do you hope to accomplish by this criminal act? The tall, dark man smiled deprecatingly. You can't begin to comprehend the purpose. An armed hijacker approached. Sir, the ship is secure and all crew members and scientists are under guard in the dining area. The engine room? Awaiting your orders. Then prepare to get underway. I want full speed. You won't get anywhere fast enough not to get caught, said Delgado. She won't do more than 10 knots. The hijacker laughed. 10 knots? You shame your ship, sir. I happen to know you made twice that in speeding to the Emerald Dolphin's rescue. However, even 20 knots is too slow. He paused and motioned to the bow where the workboat was moving into position in preparation for taking the survey ship in tow. Between the two of us, we should be able to make over 25 knots. Where are you taking us? Demanded Delgado, as angry as Birch had ever seen him. It's not your concern, the man rasped carelessly. Have I your word, Captain, that you and your crew will not attempt to resist or disobey my orders? You have guns, Birch said simply. We have no arms other than kitchen knives. While they talked, the tow rope was brought aboard and looped over the deep encounter's forward bollard. Birch's eyes suddenly took on a look of naked discomfort. We cannot leave, he said sharply. Not yet. The hijacker gazed at him, trying to read any sign of a crafty expression. He saw none. Already, you are questioning my orders. You don't understand, said Delgado. We have a submersible down on the seabed with 2 men and a woman inside. We can't just leave them. A pity, the pirate shrugged indifferently. They will have to make land on their own. Impossible. That would be murder. Don't they have communications with the outside world? They have only a small portable radio and an underwater acoustic phone, explained Delgado. They couldn't contact another vessel or aircraft unless they were within 2 miles of them. Good Lord, man, pleaded Birch. When they return to the surface and find us gone, they'll have no hope of rescue. Not this far off the shipping lanes. You'll be signing their death warrants. Not my problem. Enraged, Birch took a step toward the hijacker, who swiftly raised his gun and shoved the muzzle against the captain's chest. It would not be wise to antagonize me, Captain. His fists clenched at his sides, Birch stood there staring at the black man as if he was mad, then turned and gazed vacantly at the area of the sea where he had last seen the Abyss Navigator. God help you if those men die, he said in a voice that could have cut steel, because you will surely pay. If there is retribution, said the pirate coldly, you will not be the one to enforce it. Defeated and heartsick, thinking about Pitt and Giordino, with no course of action open to them and no ground to negotiate, Birch and Delgado could only allow themselves to be led away to the dining hall by an armed guard. Before the Abyss Navigator had risen to the surface, the deep encounter had long disappeared beyond the northeastern horizon.